I was given a copy of it by the head of peace studies for the University of New Hampshire, who sent it to me. And so we know exactly what the thought process was there. And this group organized to assert itself inside the Republican Party, saying to the Republican Party leadership, look, now that the Soviet Union is gone, there is no need for us any longer to pretend that we are not the representatives of a very tiny elite of major robber barons who came to power during the period immediately after the American Civil War, from 1868 to 1898, this 30-year period, during which the lawyers for this elite group of mercantilists created a new vehicle for business, a shareholder-owned corporation, in which the owners of all of the goods of the business are, in fact, immunized from any legal liability. They become just shareholders in the company. And the leadership of the corporation, the managers of the corporation, are immunized against any personal legal liability for the activities of the corporation. And the board of directors is immunized, basically, against any legal liability personally. And so the corporation is the only entity that is going to be held responsible legally for any of its activities. And that is, its bank account is going to be held responsible. And that's all. So what they did is they withdrew from the very heart of the normal businesses, normal entrepreneurial activity on the part of industrious and very helpful elements inside our human family, who are very creative and inventive and do so in exchange for a fair reward for their time and energy invested in developing products. But what they did is they now created this new vehicle that, in fact, had no person individually responsible for anything that it did. And therefore, it was an entity without a soul, without any conscience, that was, in fact, dedicated officially and exclusively to the maximization of personal profit for the corporation, which could then be distributed to the shareholders. And what happened is that it was that particular business entity that was developed during that 30-year period from 1868 to 1898 that rose to the fore and attempted to establish control over all of the natural resources in North America and expanded elsewhere into the world, primarily
using Danny, who were these people? Give us some names, corporate names, legal names.
These are, for example, E.H. Harriman, that owned most of the railway companies. It was the Rockefellers, who owned Standard Oil of New Jersey and Standard Oil of California. It was, in fact, the owners of the steel mills, Carnegie. There were about 40 men, white men, that basically had exercised their own intellectual acumen to basically rise to power and to dominate and control entire areas of the economy. And that what they did is they created these corporations through their lawyers. And there was a single law firm that represented all of these people. It was Brown Brothers Harriman. And this group is the private investment company that sat and organized itself, and it was represented by a single law firm, which was Sullivan and Cromwell, and the law partners in Sullivan and Cromwell, and the directors of the private investment company Brown Brothers Harriman, joined together, and you're talking about a total of about 50 men that basically controlled all of the development and distribution of the basic resources in North America. And they began to expand out through the services of Sullivan and Cromwell, the basic law firm, to expand out into international realms, establishing transnational corporations that actually no longer even had any interest whatsoever in promoting or fostering the interests of the people of the United States. They were just dedicated to the fostering and promoting of their own financial interests. And this is what they did. And this, and it's important to recognize some of the characters here, because the CEO for Brown Brothers Harriman was a man by the name of George Herbert Walker. Now, people will remember this. They recognize that name because George H.W. Bush, the president of the United States under the Republican Party at the time of the end of the Cold War in 1991, was in fact the grandson of George Herbert Walker. It's George Herbert Walker Bush. That's who he is. And George W. Bush, his son, is George Walker Bush, the grandson of George Herbert Walker. He was the CEO of Brown Brothers Harriman. And the lawyer for Brown Brothers Harriman was, in fact, Alan Dulles, who went on to become the first civilian director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Okay? And that this alliance between the members of Brown, the private investors in Brown Brothers Harriman and the partners of Sullivan and Cromwell are the key to understanding this elite and how they rose to power. And we, if you track their history and what they did together, you will see that they, in fact, were the ones that responded at the end of World War I to the creation of the Soviet Union by the Bolshevik Revolution, which rose up in October of 1917 and withdrew Russia from World War I and established the Union of Socialist Republics. And they began to advocate socialism around the world, primarily in opposition to this very group, this group of white male capitalists who were creating these corporations and being driven by this law firm of Sullivan and Cromwell. And the people in the Soviet Union, the leaders, saw this group of industrialists as basically engaged in an aggressive campaign of manifest destiny, that they believed in the white man's burden. They believed that they and their allies were authorized, even by God itself, you know, to dominate the world and to exploit and develop the natural resources of the planet for purposes of enriching a tiny 0.1% of the people of the world that were white people who were the immediate family and relatives of these individual men. That's who this group was. That's where they came from. And we are living with that now, because that what happened is these people, when the Soviet Union was created in October of 1917, actually manipulated U.S. American policy to send a U.S. military expeditionary force into Russia to try to crush this socialist revolution. And they sent them in. It was the Secretary of State under Wilson. And he was, in fact, the son-in-law of John W. Foster, who was at the height of the robber baron era in 1893. He was the Secretary of State that basically choreographed the taking over of Hawaii, the Philippine Islands, instigating the Mexican-American War, the taking over of Cuba, the entire imperialist expansion of the United States, which was characterized even by all historians as manifest destiny. It was the age of imperialism, in which they were actively engaged in attempting to lay claim to the resources, the natural resources, all across the world on behalf of their corporations. That is what was really going on. And so that what happened is when the Soviet Union was created in October of 1917, and they declared basically a worldwide campaign to try to oppose this type of manifest destiny on the part of this elite group of people, these people organized to gain control over the entire instrumentalities of the government of the United States to basically go to war against those people all around the world. And that was the actual origin of the Cold War. It was not, in fact, immediately after World War II. This began back in 1917 with Brown Brothers Harriman and the Sullivan Cromwell Law Firm basically fielding people through the instrumentalities of the United States government into the field to try to crush labor union organizing, peasant organizing, democratic organizing, trying to get people to be elected, to have control of their own natural resources, et cetera, all of which this elite group viewed to be anathema to their own personal private financial interests. And so that's where this came from. And so that it was not coincidental that the beginning of that Cold War that began in October of 1917, when it came to an end on December 31st of 1991, with the signing by Gorbachev of the decree allowing all of the republics in the Soviet Union to become free, that as soon as that Cold War came to an end, these people under George Herbert Walker Bush, the grandson of George Herbert Walker, and his Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney, and his staff, Wolfowitz and Addington and all of this crowd, gathered and said, look, now that the Cold War is over, now that we have vanquished those socialists from the world who have been opposing our policies, there's no longer any reason for us to disguise the fact that we actively endorse the exact same policies and principles as were advocated by our founding robber baron ancestors back during the robber baron era.
And that give us an example of that. Give us an example of that.
Well, what they said, for example, is they started talking about massively building up the United States military to be able to foray into all the countries of the world. And what they said is they wanted to organize a coalition now, this thing that they referred to as the New Northern Industrial Alliance, that would be made up of the United States, Canada, Mexico, not Mexico run by the indigenous people of Mexico, but run by the PRI, which is that political party that was dominated by the Castilian Spanish conquistadors, the white people, and then also England and France and Italy, and the new reunified Germany, and Russia, they said. Now that Russia had spun off all of its ethnic provinces. That's a quote from the second draft of the 1992 United States Defense Department Policy Planning Guidance Document. And so you see that this is an alliance of the Caucasian countries of the world that are dominated by the transnational corporations that are run by this elite group of families and their progeny, their newly born people, and they rise into positions of power. They run this elite secret government behind the American government, behind all of the major members of the Northern Industrial Alliance, and they're dedicated to utilizing the tax money that they extract from people through the income tax system into financing the building of massive military institutions to be able to project military power into all the different countries of the world, specifically for the purpose of maintaining their continued privileged access to the strategic raw materials that are needed by this corporate elite. And that's exactly what they did at the end of World War One. That is why they set up this commission, chaired by Winston Churchill in 1922, immediately after the war, and that they imposed these artificial nation-state boundaries.